It's 5:30. I'm Jennifer Mitchell, and you're listening to MPB at Radio. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, the latest on funding for the state's cash-strapped county jails. Also, the outlook for drug treatment in the state following controversial proposals to cut methadone treatment for those on main care and to transition patients to Suboxone. Those stories and more ahead, and your main newscast. First, this news. With this main news, I'm Jennifer Mitchell. Republican Governor Paul LePage wants to have the final say on all state hiring decisions. LePage said in a memo to cabinet members Wednesday that his office will review all vacant and newly created state positions, regardless of the funding source. LePage says he will personally sign off on all hiring decisions until that review is completed. LePage wants each of the departments to submit a hiring justification form that must be approved before any positions are posted or employment offers are made. His spokeswoman notes that the form does not ask for the potential employee's name, but requires an explanation for why the position is needed, and alternatives could be considered to accomplish the agency's mission without additional staff. Registered nurses at Eastern Maine Medical Center in Bangor have called a two-day strike for later this month. The RNs, who are represented by the Maine State Nurses Association, say the job action July 13th and 14th is designed to press hospital officials to address nurses' concerns over what they say are unsafe staffing levels at the hospital. EMMC has said staffing ratios and compensation are the biggest issues remaining on the table. EMMC registered nurse Cokie Giles is president of the Maine State Nursing Association. She says safe staffing is where the two sides are furthest apart, and the nurses' union would not have sent a strike notice on just fiscal issues.
Economics is always part of a bargaining session, but we feel still it is a staffing issue. We need to get some relief.
Giles says they're asking that day shift nurses be responsible for four patients rather than five. Both sides say they hope an agreement can be reached in time to avoid a strike. The two sides are holding bargaining talks today. And Maine police are stepping up efforts to track down a Parkman man wanted in connection with the killing of his ex-girlfriend. 38-year-old Robert Burton has eluded authorities for nearly a month since Stephanie Gibo was found dead in her Parkman home on June 5th. State police say Burton is likely surviving by breaking into vacant camps. They caution residents and visitors arriving for the holiday weekend to remain vigilant and check for any subtle signs of break-in. You're listening to MBBN Radio. The time is 25 minutes now. Ahead of 6 o'clock. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Jennifer Mitchell. Maine's county jail system will undergo yet another change in its state funding. The new funding plan, approved by the legislature this week, does away with the State Board of Corrections and gives control over the state's share of jail funding to the Department of Corrections. But as Mal Leary reports, some observers believe that this is the first step in a transition to returning all funding responsibility for the jails back to the 16 counties.
The new jail funding system would give Governor LePage at least one thing he had wanted, the demise of the State Board of Corrections. LePage believes that the board, created under the Baldacci administration, has failed to keep costs under control. LePage this year refused to appoint any new members, rendering it incapable of functioning. And he made clear his feelings on the board back in February.
What you've done is you've given the control of the jails to the sheriffs, the counties, and you've telling the state you're going to pay the bill and you can't say anything about it. And that's just not going to work. That's like giving my ex-wife my paycheck.
The new corrections legislation, LD 186, which the legislature crafted to resolve the standoff, grants the Department of Corrections the authority to administer the state's contribution to the cost of the county jails. About 15% of the overall operating costs of $80 million a year. But Penobscot County Sheriff Troy Morton says even though the state pays a small share of the costs, they exercise immense control over the jails and the costs of their operation already.
267 jail standards that are set by the Department of Corrections that affect the running of our facilities. The state has a lot of control over how we run our facilities.
He gave the example of DOC inspectors telling him the trash cans used at the jail did not meet the requirements of the DOC, so they had to be replaced. He said that cost several thousand dollars that had not been budgeted. But Morton says he supports the legislation abolishing the board and giving more authority to the Department of Corrections, even though his county is facing a serious funding problem because they will have to start paying other jails to house their excess inmates.
That boarding rate, depending on who you ask and when you ask, could for Penobscot County be between anywhere between $600,000 and $1.5 million a year for boarding.
Kennebec County Sheriff Randall Liberty, the president of the Maine Sheriff's Association, says the allocation in the state budget is less by millions than what is needed to run all the jails without triggering boarding fees.
I'm going to require some of those sending facilities to maintain very high inflated populations in the facility, or others, like I've done in the past, asking law enforcement officers to not make those misdemeanor, nonviolent, discretionary arrests.
But such actions are considered a stopgap. County administrators say the state will have to do better than its $12 million funding for the jails. Rosemary Kulo, executive director of the Maine County Commissioners Association, says the jails will have to go back to the legislature at some point for more money.
There's most likely going to be the need to request supplemental funding again next January, because this amount is just not going to be sufficient to help fund the jails in their current operations.
That request is pretty much expected by lawmakers. Representative Piggy Rotundo, a Lewiston Democrat, co-chairs the Budget Writing Appropriations Committee and says people are forgetting the whole reason for the creation of the State Board of Corrections was to bring more efficiency to the way county jails are run.
One of the concerns about sending these back to the counties is that those efficiencies will not be found. They will come back with a request, I'm sure, for additional funding.
The board of the Maine County Commissioners Association will meet Wednesday to consider the implications of the new jails legislation and the funding levels in the state budget. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
One of the most controversial budget cuts proposed by the LePage administration this year would have eliminated MaineCare funding for methadone treatment in federally regulated clinics. Instead, the state suggested that about 4,000 methadone patients be redirected to office-based treatment with the alternative drug Suboxone. The idea was widely panned by substance abuse treatment providers, and as Susan Sharon reports, lawmakers have opted to preserve the status quo, but also to look for ways to improve the service.
In March, doctors and treatment providers rolled out a full-court press against the plan to eliminate MaineCare coverage for methadone. They said it could put opiate addicts in danger of withdrawal and even death from being abruptly taken off the drug. They said the two replacement therapy drugs, methadone and Suboxone, are not interchangeable. And they pointed out that even if Suboxone could be used as a substitute for methadone, there is currently a shortage of Suboxone providers in the state of Maine. Even some doctors who treat patients with Suboxone were opposed.
Like, theoretically, I should be delighted at this.
This was Dr. Meredith Norris's reaction back in February when the plan was first announced.
And I should be like, hooray, thank you, LePage, for sending all these people to me. And my first thought was, holy cow, how are we going to absorb that? We can't absorb that. We can barely even meet the need now for people who are Suboxone appropriate.
The LePage administration argued that moving opiate addicts out of methadone clinics and into treatment with a primary care doctor would give them more access to a full range of medical services. Dr. Kevin Flanagan is the medical director for the Office of MaineCare. In an interview earlier this year, he cited the need for a more holistic approach to treatment.
People who suffer from addiction don't just have addiction. Many of these members also suffer from other medical and behavioral health conditions. And again, once you get to where you can get the entire package of services at one location, we know, the literature is unquestionable, that there is going to be improved health outcomes.
Methadone is considered the gold standard medication for treatment of opiate addiction, and lawmakers were not persuaded to eliminate it for MaineCare patients. The compromise budget passed this week removed the proposed cut to service.
So that was good news and reflected the understanding of the legislature that methadone was an essential treatment for individuals with opiate addiction in Maine.
Jim Cohen is an attorney representing a coalition of methadone providers in the state of Maine. He says the budget directs the Department of Health and Human Services to convene a panel of stakeholders to evaluate ways to make methadone treatment more cost-effective and to better meet the needs of patients.
We've suggested that the state re-examine its policies regarding hours of clinic operation, take-home dosage, as well as re-examining reimbursement rates to better enable clinics to be located where patients are, and in that way reduce transportation costs and reduce some of the barriers for individuals who might otherwise seek and need methadone treatment in Maine.
Cohen says the stakeholders are expected to include methadone patient representatives and treatment providers. The budget calls for a report back from the group by December 1st. The department did not respond to a request for comment. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Advocates for Maine's bicyclists and pedestrians are celebrating a rare example of political harmony in Augusta. Passage of a bill designed to make Maine roads safer for those who are traveling on two wheels or by foot. Tom Porter has more.
The junction of Franklin Arterial and Marginal Way is Portland's busiest intersection. 20 lanes of traffic converge on the edge of the downtown district of Maine's largest city. To miss a green light here can be frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry, says Brian Allenby.
As a cyclist, I ride through this intersection every single day, and I have seen many scofflaw cyclists who have chosen to navigate this intersection because the lights are a little bit longer, because it is busy. They choose to navigate it in interesting and often not legal ways.
Allenby is with the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, a strong supporter of LD 1301, an act to improve the safety of vulnerable users in traffic and to clarify the responsibility of bicyclists and pedestrians. Until now, Allenby says traffic laws pertaining to bicycle use had been all over the place, codified in a number of different statutes. With the passage on June 12th of LD 1301, the responsibilities of cyclists are spelled out clearly and in one place.
It's really clarifying that bicycles need to follow the laws in terms of stop signs, stop signals, traffic signals, the same as cars do. They need to drive on the same side of the road just as cars do. And that is probably the single most common complaint that we get from the general public is, you know, how can you expect a motorist to follow the laws when cyclists don't follow the laws too?
In addition to encouraging bicycle users to ride safely, LD 1301 also aims to protect cyclists as well as pedestrians and other non-motorists by creating a new category of vulnerable road users. Allenby says that refers to anyone using the road who's not inside a motor vehicle.
It's not protected by a cage of steel that's designed to keep them safe. Having that language in law is a big step in kind of bringing awareness to the fact that those users on the road who aren't in motor vehicles are vulnerable.
One of the law's major provisions is designed to make crosswalks safer for pedestrians. It does this by requiring drivers to yield to people who have made it clear that they intend to cross the road. Failure to do so, and they'll be looking at the standard fine of $165. This part of the law means a lot to Chris Evans, whose father, David Grant, was killed walking to work in Brewer just before Christmas last year.
He was hit on December 20th, crossing a crosswalk to his barbershop. This is actually the second time he was hit a year previous in the same spot.
After the tragedy, Evans testified twice before lawmakers in Augusta, urging the passage of LD 1301. While there's no publicity campaign attached to it, the law does strengthen driver education programs by requiring increased instruction on the rights and protection of vulnerable road users. Bill sponsor Amy Volk, a Republican state senator from Scarborough, is a keen runner who puts herself in this category. She says on many occasions she's encountered dangerous and inconsiderate driving. She hopes the law will encourage motorists to ask themselves some important questions.
You know, what is your responsibility? And kind of making people think in terms of, you know, when I come across a biker or a runner or a walker or someone in a wheelchair who's, you know, using the road, is it going to really change my day to, you know, slow down or perhaps even come to a stop if I can't easily get around that person and give them, you know, plenty of distance?
According to estimates, more than 250 people are hit by cars every year in Maine, about a quarter of whom are struck while using a crosswalk or other approved crossing place. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
It's just about 13 minutes now ahead of 6 o'clock. Time to check the weather with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
We are finally on a roll, a dry one at that, heading towards the holiday weekend. Moon-drenched skies tonight while clouds cling to the county. Mid-40s in the mountain valleys, mid-50s along the shore roads. Morning clouds hold to north, partial clearing in the afternoon with nearly full sunshine for the rest of the state. Very dry, low 70s to low 80s north to south. Fine fourth, more sun than clouds, albeit filtered extensively in the afternoon, Portland south, mid-70s to low 80s. Sunday, we'll see an even blend of sunshine and clouds for many, but quite a bit more cloudiness over the mountains and far north with a possible afternoon shower. Monday will be spectacularly bright and very warm. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
Well, still ahead on All Things Considered, China is understood to have been behind some significant hacks of major U.S. institutions, both commercial and governmental, most recently at the Office of Personnel Management, where personal information of former and current government workers has been compromised. That's still ahead.